Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, but this is a very special one, isn't it, Stone?
It most certainly is. We have Mac and Rhea Story back in the house. We've gotten to know these two over the last few months, and I just have so much respect for them, and I know I speak for you as well, Lee, for not only what they do, but why and how they go about doing it. I'm thrilled to death to be collaborating with these two on a variety of projects, and I want to, as much and as often as we can, share with our listeners what we're learning from these two. So please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, Mac and Rhea Story. Hello, guys.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having us again. It's a pleasure always to be here and give you guys a hug and shake hands and have some laughs before we get going.
Absolutely. We are so excited about it. You know, Mac and I love what we do and talking about leadership, but we love talking about it with people like you guys who are eager to learn and grow and to make a difference in the lives of others. So that's one of the things we appreciate is just that opportunity.
Well, it's exciting for us to really dig in deep today to talk, to maybe demystify leadership a little bit. Can you guys help us define some terms maybe? And how do you guys define leadership or leader?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, Mac and I were speaking at a local high school just this morning for a group of high school students. And that's one of the very first things we covered with them, because a lot of us have the misconception that we're not leaders or that we aren't leading other people. So we love to talk about that right off the bat. So Mac, share with us what you talked about this morning.
Yeah, when we talk about leadership, what we really want everyone to understand, I mean, it's so dynamic, so complex. When you start reading about it, you can read from 10 different experts and you get taught 10 different methods. And it's because it's so broad and so deep. And we just like to get everybody to understand our point is to understand that leadership is influence at the base, at the ground level. I talk about in my first book, Defining Influence, I actually ask the question, and I also ask this when we're speaking very often and we get the opportunity, if leadership is influence, when does it start? And a lot of times people say, well, it starts when I meet you. And I'll always say, just start before that and get them to walk back. And I keep on asking, does it start before then? Does it start before then? And usually I can get everyone back to when I was born. You know, when they were born and were exposed to the world in that delivery room, they started having influence. People started doing things because they exist. And I always ask, could it have been before that? And a lot of times they struggle with this one. And they'll say, no, it couldn't have been before that. And as soon as I say, are there any moms in the room? As soon as I say that, they know where we're going, right? As soon as mom knew she was pregnant.
Life changed.
Life changed. And this soon-to-be human being started having influence. And then when a dad found out that mom was pregnant, he started being influenced.
And acting crazy.
And acting crazy. Ain't no telling what, right?
So you sound like that's personal experience talking there.
Yeah, so that's what I like people to know is leadership is influence. Because we exist, we have influence. And then I go a little bit deeper and ask them to, you know, think of it. There's really two scales. On a scale of 1 to 10, there's positive influence. Then there's a scale of 1 to 10, there's negative influence. And everything we're talking about is relative to character-based, service-based, servant leadership on the positive side. But we're born on the scale. We don't get to say we don't want to play as a leader, but we're on the scale. And then throughout our life, really how much do we want to build our character and our competency will determine how high up the scale that we go. That's the basics of what leadership is.
Now, when you're talking to high school students, I would imagine that there's a point for them where that deciding whether to be on the side of light or the side of darkness is pretty relevant to a lot of the people. How do you kind of get the feel for the audience to see which way they're leaning?
Well, you know, one of the things that it's usually easy, you can almost always tell if you're watching a group of people, you can always tell the natural leader. Just step back and look, and you can, you know, whether it's a group of kids playing on the playground or in a social setting, you can pretty quickly identify the leader of the group. How they decide to use that influence, whether it's positive or negative, again, it really comes back to, are they manipulating someone? So are they trying to influence the group or members of the group or someone else for their own benefit? So taking advantage of someone, and that would be a negative influence. Or are they trying to really motivate them for mutual benefit? So are we trying to help each other? Or are we looking for the win-win? And that's positive influence. So those are the things we look for in that.
And one of the things, I mean, what Rhea's touching on is why we're always talking about character. And I mean, that's, we can't make someone choose their values. If they're positive or negative, that's based on what they value. And we talk about that with them. If people who are very influential in the negative sense are going to attract people who value whatever that is. Like I always joke around from the stage that, you know, criminals don't hang out with attorneys and attorneys don't hang out with criminals because they have different values, right? They both could be leading and influence a lot of people, but it's a totally different group of people. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So leadership just seems to come with so much, and maybe it's an equal measure, opportunity and obligation.
Yes, both.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Opportunity, obligation, and responsibility. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no, that's it. I'm done. But it just seems like that if, particularly if you have been given the chance to lead a group of people, I mean, that's a heck of a lot of responsibility. And you're going to screw it up sometimes, right? You're going to do some things wrong, and then you have the responsibility to be open to that data and get that feedback. I mean, it's just it can be kind of scary, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, because everybody's watching, right? That's one of the things right. We talk to them. And the things we're talking about here with you this morning and with those high school students this morning, it's the same principles. They apply when we talk to CEOs and of $1 million and $1 billion companies. It's the same things that we're teaching them. Just the stories are different. But when you talk about accepting that responsibility from a role model standpoint, when Rhea and I were in Guatemala with John Maxwell in 2013, and I shared this story with him this morning, one of my interpreter, and I had to have two. I had to have one. I had to have one go from country to English and then one from English to Spanish. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? So that's why I bring Rhea too. She helps
with
that.
It's funny. I don't hear it at all. It sounds perfectly normal to me.
So my interpreter, I'm always talking leadership everywhere I go. So on our taxi ride over to the first group of people we were training, because overall we trained over 20,000 leaders that week. 150 of us did. Wow. With John. And when we got out and we walked into this group of CEOs and we're prepping the room, Bertha was her name, a young 20-year-old college student. She said, just out of the blue, so it was something I said that triggered this. She said, "Mac, I don't know if I want to be a role model." I just kind of tilted my head and looked at her and put my hand on her shoulder. And I said, "Bertha, you already are."
It's too late.
Yeah, too late. The real question is, what kind do you want to be? And that's all of us. That's what I was talking to the students this morning. Every one of them's a role model. Because, see, a lot of people don't want to be because it comes with responsibility.
Well, no, I get the feeling. I mean, that is. It's a little intimidating that you are a role model. But to come to the realization that you don't really get to choose, I think that's important.
Now you mentioned earlier that in the womb that the infant had influence,
yep.
Right? So does the influence being in the womb where they don't have any, you know, they're not consciously there doing stuff and influencing, but their existence is influencing.
Yep.
To now they're in high school and they're going about their business. And some people, like Stone was saying, may or may not want to be leaders. Is your premise that everyone is a leader and everyone has influence and that now they just have to decide, you know, how best to use that?
Yep, exactly. And that's the way that we teach it. Mm-hmm. When we're in the corporate world, we teach it the same way. I mean, everybody does have influence. And using our term, and we get that from John Maxwell, leadership is influence, one word definition, that how are you going to develop it? You have it. What are you going to
do? Right. They say in marketing that you're branding, whether you're branding or not.
Absolutely.
So, so it sounds like it's the same thing here. You're leading in some manner, whether you think you are or not.
And everyone, and you guys know, next week we'll have a cool show with Jimmy Collins, former president of Chick-fil-A, and we'll be talking about his book, Creative Followership. You know, he reported directly to Truett Cathy, and everybody else reported you know, to Jimmy and Truett, obviously. And but he wrote his book on creative followership, and he's passionate about following. And the reason I say that is this gets so dynamic and there's so much to talk about. And your question, you know, everyone is a leader, but also everyone is a follower. I mean, you can get so deep into this stuff when you really start talking about it. Because as soon as I accept your influence, I'm following you. As soon as you accept mine, you're following me. Yeah. And at the same time, we're both leading.
So now let's talk about then that premise. So now everyone's a leader, everyone's a follower. What are my responsibilities as a leader? What are my responsibilities as a follower?
It's pretty cool because they're actually the same. And someone asked me that question recently on LinkedIn, and it was they were wanting to know how, if I have a management role, how do I become a better leader of my team? And it's, to answer your question, is both of us, follower, leader, we have to work on our character. And a lot of people don't understand what we mean when we talk about character. You want to touch on character a bit, Rhea?
Sure. So I think what Mac is really getting down to is that we must influence and lead ourselves before we can be really effective at influencing and leading other people. So, you know, we really define character as the will to do the right thing when it's not the easy thing. And, you know, that applies both to personal and professional life. You know, it's doing the right thing when the right thing isn't easy or isn't fun, or making some tough decisions as a leader in the corporate world, or just even with your kids. Think about the responsibilities that you have with them and leading them and helping them grow. So when we talk about that character being the will to do what's right, you know, leadership is influence. That's a simple concept. But how do we get more influence and how do we develop as a leader in any dimension of our life is that's very complex because it does require that character development. And that's where we really work on the side of things that it's not what we know, but it's who we are. And I think that's the big difference. Character is not doing something different, but being something different.
But when you're talking about character and kind of having this true north of what's right, I would think, especially, and getting back to your high school talk, there's groups in the high school that are part of maybe a not so great environment.
Yes.
And that their true north may not be my true north or your true north, but to them and their environment, that seems to be the true north. So how can they tell? Like, to them, they might think they have good character in the environment that they're in, when sure, maybe society, throughout society, maybe, you know, it's not fitting in, it's the way society true north is. So how do you help that person?
And the first thing each one of us has to do, because we all interact with children of all ages, is we've got to model it. You know, what do they see from the teacher? Not what the teacher says, but what do they see? And then when we walk into the room, what do they see from us? When they're at home, what do they see from their parents? Right? We the adults have to model it. Most of us don't do that great a job of modeling high impact characters, as I call it. You got something?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in here for a minute. Something that was pretty powerful for me. Stephen Covey talked about it in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he said, you know, you sit down and sit in a quiet place, get away from the hustle and the bustle and the phones and the computers, and sit down and think to yourself and imagine your own funeral. Not that we're trying to be morbid here, but what would you want your wife to say or your husband to say at your funeral? What would you want your best friend who's known you for 30 years to say? You know, what would you want your kids to say? And write down, you know, kind of script to yourself what they would say. Walk through that. You know, what do you want them to say was your legacy of your life? And that's your personal definition of success. And from that, you can drill down and to say, okay, that, you know, if I want people to say that family time was important to me, that's a value for you. So it's, you know, each of us as individuals have to define it for ourselves, what's important to ourselves, and make sure that we're living true to those values.
And let me mention, just getting back, you know, how do these students who maybe are in the wrong crowd or being influenced by the wrong crowd, how do we come in and impact them, right?
Right.
As adults, not just we as Mac and Rhea, but adults.
Right, and have the influence to kind of nudge them maybe in a different direction.
Yep, and that takes, this stuff gets so deep, but it's a lot of fun. So it's just like when we first went there last week, we were there also, and they invited us back this week. But first thing you got to do is connect with them. If you don't connect with them, they don't care who you are, what you got to say, right?
Right.
Is that getting back to what?
Yeah.
So, you know, that day was cool. Our first time there last week, they come in, they shook our hand, and introduced themselves and they went and sat down, and Rhea and I were there for only about 30 minutes. What was awesome, besides they took tons of notes and they were engaged, but when they left, every one of them stood in a line and hugged each one of us individually on the way out. And I mean, we had connected with them and they were engaged with us, but it can't just be me and Rhea there for 30 minutes one time. We got to have parents that understand that. And Rhea's talking about the seven habits, and the number one habit out of there, I mean, you got to know all of them, but the number one relative to what you're talking about is habit five: seek first to understand, then be understood. So you kind of have to, as a parent, you've got lots of time with your children. Mm-hmm. And I can tell my story. I lost my relationship with my son from the time he was 15 to 19. And his mother from a previous marriage, Eric, chose to go stay with her because he didn't have to follow me anymore. Once he got 15, he could decide, I'm going to go stay with mom and not have anything to do with you. So from 15 to 19, we basically had no relationship. When he was 17, which was 2 years into that four-year gap, that's when I first got exposed to reading and studying leadership. And my first exposure was to the seven habits. And out of hundreds of books I've read, that book's still my number one. It changed my life, and I teach it and talk about it every day. But 2 years after starting to read and study leadership, I was able to get habit five right and rebuild that relationship with him. But it took me 2 years even studying it, talking it, teaching it with my own son to figure out he wasn't the problem. I bet every one of you, everybody listening, if they think about this, but right here in the room, we can see each other so we can now and have fun. But just for me, I realize every problem I've ever had, everyone, big or small, tiny, I've been involved in every single one.
It's probably a coincidence.
When Rhea was talking just a moment ago, and I thought it was an excellent idea to sit down and think through that, what a marvelous exercise. And it scared me again. You guys are scaring me all morning here, because it made me think. We talked earlier in the conversation about leadership starting, you know, like when you're in the womb. It's like womb to wake. I mean, and yeah, beyond,
absolutely.
Right?
That's
because
good,
right? You've got legacy, right? That you're trying to, you're still leading. Some people, Covey's passed, hasn't he?
Yep.
The man's still leading right now while we're talking.
That's legacy, yep.
Yeah, which is great and awesome and scaring the heck out of me right now.
And actually what you're talking about, I believe I can't remember what's in all my books, but I think I talked about that in Defining Influence, you know, that you lead before you're here and you leave afterwards. I mean, every time you turn on the light switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got, that's Mr. Edison started this, that made that happen. I mean, people are influenced. And then Truett Cathy with Chick-fil-A, he's passed away, but he's still impacting and influencing tons and tons of people. And those guys were way up the scale, right?
Now, when we talk about a leader and leadership, so I'm guessing that both of you don't believe you're a born leader. Everybody believes that you're a leader just by default, right? But these skills are things that can be learned.
Absolutely. I think it's Warren Bennis who said that one of the greatest myths about leadership is that leaders are born rather than made.
Let me jump in right quick, though.
Okay.
I've never known an unborn leader.
Well, so there might exist, you just haven't known them.
And then on Channel 13, there are a lot of born-again leaders.
That's right.
We're all born. But whether leadership is something, you know, certainly you may be more gifted in the qualities that help you be more effective as a leader. If you're mm-hmm. a natural-born communicator, that's certainly going to help you accelerate your leadership skills. Yes. But can the skills be learned? Absolutely. And, you know, I think the first step is realizing that, number one, we all can get better. And, you know, it is very simple, like anything in life. It's very simple to do, but it's not easy to do. Much like anything worth having, it does take some work and some intentional studying. But can it be done? Absolutely. Absolutely. We all can improve. Leadership is so dynamic because it's different. The principles are the same, but the situations will change. And so how you're able to lead will be different in different situations. So it takes some experience, certainly, learning what works and learning what doesn't.
Now, what advice would you give to the person that maybe is just very introverted and quiet and, you know, is by themselves and doesn't really, isn't the life of the party, isn't the one that's standing out in front of the crowd? What advice do you give that person to kind of take some baby steps towards this leadership kind of mentality?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that was exactly me for a long time. And, you know, I'd still would be the first, I would still not be the first person to talk at the life of a party. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the first thing I think that's important to do if you're wanting to really develop those leadership skills is start learning to ask questions. Because when you ask questions, you're able to influence someone at a whole different level. If you're willing to listen to the answers, of course, that's a caveat to that. But, you know, asking those questions, number one, it'll give you an ability to connect to whomever it is in the room. And that's the first step in building influence, is to build that relationship. And that's critical. I can also tell you, you know, I've figured out early on, the more questions I ask and the more I get the other person to answer, the less talking I have to do. It's pretty simple. I was talking with a young lady the other day. It was early morning. We were at the gym and she was like, you know, I'm just not a natural communicator. I don't really like to talk to people. And so as we spent some time talking, her dream is to be an entrepreneur and own her own consulting business. And so she was like, well, what can I do to start connecting with those people and potential clients in her case? And so we talked that whole thing through about just asking questions, you know, questions about what does the other person like or enjoy? Just little questions can help you build that relationship. And that helps you build influence, because it demonstrates that you care about the other person. And that's crucial.
But when a person, there's some introverts that don't have the self-confidence to even think that their question is worthy to be asked.
Sure. You know what I did, this is an inside tip, but I really sat down with a 3x5 card and I wrote down 3 or 4 or 5 good questions that would mostly work all the time. And I'm not kidding. It was like a sit down and say, okay, well, what are some good questions that would help me just get a conversation started and help me build confidence with that? So then I was prepared in any given situation. You know, I love to tell the story in 2013, Mac and I were, when we were in Guatemala, I was coming down through the hotel and I had the opportunity to come around the corner and to get on the elevator, and John Maxwell was standing there, and he gets on the elevator and we're riding down to the bottom floor.
Just you two.
Just the two of us. And not only that, but he was headed to the pool. So, I mean, it's like flip-flops and a t-shirt, you know.
He was looking sharp, wasn't he, really?
Well, and I had absolutely nothing to say. I was like, I don't know how to start a conversation or how to carry on. I was just completely unprepared for that. And I got off that elevator. Now, fortunately, he was not conversationally challenged like I am. So I got off that elevator and I said, never again am I going to be unprepared. I'm going to have some questions that I can just go to in a pinch when I'm not prepared. I can pull something out and get a conversation going. And you can always ask a follow-up question. Ask why. Why do they enjoy something? You can get them talking.
I'd like to add on to that, and it touches on what you were saying, Lee, about it's part of the growing process. You know, growth doesn't just happen, as John says. We have to become intentional. And one of the quotes I remember from a long time ago was, we have to become comfortable being uncomfortable if we want to grow. Like your question assumes, we're assuming people want to grow and want to have more, do more, be more, and all that stuff. Even if they're an introvert, most of those people still want to do more, have more, and be more. And no matter who we are, or what level we are at, all of our growth comes outside of our comfort zone, which means we have to choose to become uncomfortable. And if we understand why we're doing it, we become comfortable being uncomfortable. Does that make sense?
So it goes back to really understanding your why.
Yeah, that's one of the things we talked actually to the high school students about. It's hard not to keep talking about them because we were just there this morning. But that was one of the things that I told them even when I was in high school, and they all laughed when I told them. So it still happened in the same way. But when we got ready to graduate back in the 1900s when I was in high school, we had everything was on paper. But, you know, they got the computers now. But first thing they do is look at all these opportunities, job descriptions, titles, careers. And then over on the right side always says the annual pay. So most people are going up and down the annual pay list trying to figure out what they want to do.
That's right.
And what we talk about is they need to figure out what they want to be before they figure out what they want to do, because unfortunately a lot of people follow that path, or they follow a parent's influence or someone else's influence, and they get into something and they go invest 4, 6, or 8 years learning a competency because of whatever reason. Most of the time it's to make some certain money. And And then they graduate and they go out and get the job. And unfortunately, a bunch of them stay miserable the rest of their lives because they won't pay that price again to go back and start over from scratch. So it's one thing I was telling them today was, and this applies to anybody at any age, but at some point you need to start following your passion to find your purpose. And then regardless of money, most of the time, all the time, if you're truly passionate and you've got the energy, nobody can compete with you that's just doing it to make money or that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I want them to know is if you're following your passion and you find your purpose and you got all this energy and you're living that life, most likely if you want to make money, you're going to make plenty of money. But if you don't make plenty of money, you're still going to be happy because you're doing what you want to do.
You win either way.
You win either way. Like Mother Teresa, she didn't make a lot of money, but she made a lot of difference, right?
That's right.
So I have I was going to say a quick question. The question is going to be reasonably quick, but I think the answer might be more involved. But it has to do with just very tactical advice, if you have it, on the recovering leader. Let's say that purely hypothetically, there's probably no one in this room, but starts to hear this, starts to read, starts to want to grow, and realizes, wow, I really have not been doing a very good job on this, but I'm going to start now. But I still have this group of people that I'm leading, and their history with me is, I'm not a great leader. I'm assuming you don't go in guns a-blazing and, you know, talk about the new seminar you just went to. How do you go about repairing, rebuilding, being that new, different leader?
Sure, that's a great
leadership
question.
Reboot.
Yeah,
leadership
that's
reboot.
That's a good one.
Can I have a do-over?
Okay, so it was not a quick question.
If you would have just said leadership reboot, yeah, have, it could have been
done. Like
yeah, can you talk about leadership reboot, Rhea? Cut the rest of that stuff out, Ryan, on the post.
I'm gonna have to coin that term. That's awesome.
You can also have womb to wake. That's on YouTube.
we'll give you credit, but not royalties. So, you know, I think for me, and Mac may have a different perspective on this, but I think what I would do is I would just, you know, kind of what you touched on, you know, it doesn't have to be, hey, I heard about the newest, latest and greatest seminar, but hey, I learned something. And if you go into that approach with your team, assuming you're in a organization or with your company, and say, you know, go in with that attitude of humility and saying, hey, I'm not perfect. I've made some mistakes in the past. And you know what? That applies for your family too. You know, anytime you're trying to reboot a relationship, that's exactly what we have to do. We have to go in with that mindset of saying, hey, I made a mistake and let me work to fix it and be transparent about it.
And what Rhea's talking about, you guys are asking about, really is all around trust. Because if you've lost your leadership or your influence with your team or your family, you've lost trust in some way. And what she's saying is that you start to even have a chance to rebuild it or reboot it, you've got to start with humility and come clean. And what Rhea said, we have someone ask us recently, we spoke to a group of HR leaders, and a person come up and spoke to us at the end and was talking about struggles with her team and that sort of stuff. And how does she leave the conference and go back and get better? And my advice to her was kind of what Rhea was saying. First of all, be humble. Tell her you come to this thing tonight, heard us speak, took a bunch of notes, done a lot of reflecting, and sit everybody down in the room and say, I need to be better. We all need to be better. But right now, Mac's story needs to be better. And I know I've made mistakes, and here's three books I've got. I'm going to start reading them, and I'm going to be sharing with you guys so you can hold me accountable and start to rebuild that trust. But that's not going to do it. The talking is not going to do it. You need to talk so you can declare your intent. But then now you got to follow through because that's the part that really matters.
The action.
That's right.
And you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go.
I would just wanted to touch on, you know, when we're talking about why leadership is important to begin with. You know, you think of any situation in your life when you are mad or sad or frustrated or upset, it's not because you had too much influence.
Never is that problem.
It's because we didn't have enough. So, you know, whether it's trying to influence your teenager to make a right decision on what they're doing on Friday night, or whether it's trying to influence the people you work with and you spend a lot of time with in the company to do the right thing or uphold the values of the company, whatever you're trying to do, whenever you're trying to influence that person, that's when you need leadership skills. And that's why it's so important for all of us, I think, because again, it's not just professional, but personal as well. We all want to influence someone. Trying to help them make a better decision. That's why we study leadership.
Now, for the person who isn't actively studying leadership and but maybe stumbles upon this information, what tips would you give them in terms of just getting some base knowledge?
Start reading. I think that's, for me, that's the greatest way. And, you know, you don't have to order a big book, although you could. There's plenty of them out there. I mean, you can just get online and read some good leadership blogs. Mac and I both put out a ton of just regular leadership blogs. There's great TEDx talks to get started. There's all kind of resources out there. You can get on YouTube and watch some John Maxwell videos. You know, there's just a ton of resources to get started.
But how do you know who are the kind of speaking the truth and who are kind of maybe the charlatans that are just trying to, you know, take my money?
You know, and again, Mac may have a different perspective on this. I think most of us have an innate sense of what's right. When we're talking about character, and we may not always honor it, but we usually know. And if we may not know when we're looking at it to someone else, we know when someone's not doing right for us or to us. So that would be that first test for my suggestion is that person trying to manipulate you for their benefit or help you for theirs? Are they giving or are they taking? And Matt can elaborate on that, I'm sure. But
what Rhea's talking about there, the giving part, you know, it's going to be giving or taking. Again, that comes down to our values. I mean, there's some leadership folks out there that have thousands, hundred thousands, maybe millions of followers, and I won't ever listen to them because they got so much profanity in their language, and what they're teaching may be 100% accurate, but they're not living it all. None of us are perfect, though. Don't get me wrong when I'm saying that, but I just don't want to learn my leadership from someone who's using profanity. But obviously, there's hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of people who are at that level, and they resonate with somebody who has profanity. I mean, there's some folks that I know people recommend, oh, you should go listen to this, and I know how this person speaks because I've heard people talk about it, and I have no interest in that. And what we talk about really with, and this again applies on the small level, even with anybody, is kind of amazing, but you've got to get it all right to build trust. We talk about high impact leader. High impact leader are all the same. They all have tremendously high character. Low impact leader, you could have 1,000 of them and they're low impact leaders for 1,000 different reasons, because it could be one piece of their character that's causing them to just totally lose. Like somebody maybe tells white lies. They're perfect, but they tell a white lie, you ain't really sure all the time. So they lose a lot of influence. Or it may be how they talk to their children. They may talk to their coworkers perfectly, but you see them on the phone to their spouse. There's a million reasons relative to character that you could lose all trust with people. Mm. But to really have a high trust with a majority of people, you got to get as much of it right as you can.
Now, when you say get it right, what are some of the traits that they have to get right?
Really, we're talking about character and integrity.
Authenticity, transparency. And you know, you won't know that right off the bat. If you just Google a leadership book and you pick it up, you're not going to know all of that right away.
Well, it's going to sound good.
It's going to sound good. It's yeah. Get a good description. But as you start reading it, you know, you're looking for those things. Does that person demonstrate those characteristics that I want to be like? Because you're opening them up, you're opening yourself up to their influence. You want it to be the direct, you know, if you know where you're going, it's going to be a whole lot easier to get there. So knowing the values that you want in your life, think back to the funeral scenario where you're like, these are the values that I want to have in my life. Who can I find who can influence me and help me grow in that area?
It's the end in mind. So yeah. When you have the end in mind, it helps you aim.
You know all about them seven habits.
Some of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Beginning with the end in mind. Once you know where you're going and where you are and where you're going. And I'll say, you may be very attracted to someone, but as you grow, that person who has been growing you may grow beyond them, and now you don't follow that person anymore, or you don't want that person's mentorship. It may just be temporary. As we grow, that should happen. Because we talk about, everyone in this room, everyone listening, to be where they're at, they had to leave someone behind. And whatever level you're at, if you want to get to another level, you're going to, and I'm talking mainly about character, you're going to have to leave some good people behind. The further you climb up, the higher caliber people you're having to leave behind to go to the next level, because they're not there. They're wherever you're at today. And and most, that's a tough thing for people when you start moving. I mean, it was tough for me when I quit drinking alcohol and quit using profanity and all that kind of stuff that I used to do. For me to, I had to leave those people behind, and I was not attracting the next level people yet because I didn't have any credibility long term.
You're in limbo, right?
Yeah, and that's what stops a lot of people.
I'll bet.
They get trapped.
You snap back, right?
It's lonely.
Because you can get back into the other crowd, right?
Easy. They want you back.
They're trying to pull you back. You got to work on your followership.
Exactly.
Yep. So to learn and grow, one really strong strategy is to teach or at least share, right? I get the sense that the two of you learn and grow a great deal simply by the act of sharing and teaching. Is that accurate?
Oh, I think so. I think, number one, if I know I'm going to be teaching it to someone, I'm paying a whole lot more attention. Because if I know I got to turn around and repeat it, I'm like trying to memorize the stuff. So I think that's helpful. But number two, you know, you can't give someone what you don't have. And if I'm wanting to influence people and help other people grow, I need to be pouring into myself, because I can't give them something if I haven't learned it.
And I give you two points. When I very first started listening to reading leadership content, it was in 2008. And it was actually a 1-hour version of the Seven Habits book, which is 13 hours, the full audio. And pretty quick, Dr. Covey in there says two things. First thing, it didn't resonate with me at the time, but I'll go back to it, but it fits right here. He said, if you truly want to learn this material, start teaching it to someone within 24 or 48 hours. And that just kind of went on past me, but that was early on he said that. And then pretty quick, he said he started teaching about habit one, which was being proactive. And what he teaches is the most important principle that everyone around the world seemed to get from him, and is also the one that impacted me the most. And when I teach people this, it was the first thing we taught the high school kids last week. But between stimulus and response, human beings have the freedom to choose their response. And I was like, he don't know Mac's story. Because when I was listening to that, I was like, I actually hit rewind several times and over and over, but it made sense. Like you're talking about, Lee, how do you know who to listen to? And I'd never listened to any leadership, had never been through any corporate training with leadership, even though I'd been in it almost 20 years. And it just resonated with me. It just made sense. And at that time, what we used to say in my family was short temper runs in the family. And just follow us around. We'd provide the evidence to support the belief. But what I learned just within those few moments was irresponsibility runs in our family. And I was a major contributor of that. So I played it a few times and I let it go on.
So you heard stimulus and response, that being human, you can play in that space, right?
I didn't even know I had a space, though, when
I heard
it.
You didn't think you had a space, right?
Nobody had ever said anything to me like that.
But just that premise opened your mind to different possibilities.
Absolutely. I mean, and I live by it. I mean, and then he goes on to talk about proactive people respond and reactive people respond. And the difference is proactive people respond based on values. And we're assuming values that are in alignment, time-tested values, timeless. It's in all of us from the beginning of time to the end of time. And reactive people respond based on feeling. And they usually instantly respond based on this program that's in them, because they don't understand they can rewrite the program. And then everyone around us buys into it. And I always tell the joke from the stage, you know, if somebody's out, usually everybody, they've been at a red light wanting to turn red and there's a car in front of them with a turn signal turning right, and I want to go right, the light's red, nobody's coming. There's a sign that says right turn on red. This car's just sitting there, not going. And, you know, the old days, the old Mac, I would get irritated and no telling what I'd say or do.
There might be a horn honking.
No telling what. It could be ugly. It was bad back then. But, you know, the light finally turns green. This person turns and me or whoever's back there drives by, does whatever on the flyby, you know, whatever. And now I'm mad and I get home or get to work and I walk in, and first thing I start doing is telling whoever I'm talking to about this idiot that made me so mad at the red light a minute ago. And usually what will happen is they'll agree and then they'll tell you a similar story. And the funny thing is, this person that I gave full authority to control my emotions, and you bought into it that yeah, that person made me so mad and I believe it and you believe it. That person don't even know I exist on the planet unless I did something really stupid when I was driving by. But that's transferring responsibility.
But you see how much influence I have?
Absolutely. So that's how my journey started right there. And then I started reading every day since 2008, read leadership every day. And it don't mean I read 100 pages every day. Some days I do, but some days it's just a paragraph or two paragraphs. But every day it's a compound effect over time.
Mm-hmm. And then that's another trait of a leader, is someone who is hungry for this knowledge and wants to learn and knows that you don't stop learning.
It is a journey. It's not a destination where you get there. Like any living thing, we have to be growing or we're stagnating. And, you know, Stone, you touched on it earlier about it's a bit of a responsibility, you know, when you take on that concept that if I'm influencing someone and I want to be better at it, then it suddenly it comes with a whole lot of, oh, I've got to get busy doing something. It is a responsibility and it does require sacrifice, because now you've got to give up maybe some TV show time or maybe some free time on the weekends to be learning and studying and growing. But all of us, if we take on that responsibility, we take it on, number one, because we want to be better ourselves, but we know that life can be better. And it is a journey. You're not going to wake up one day and have arrived and say, I can quit growing now. It's once you take it on, it doesn't stop.
So I just like to share, you know, to the listeners, if anybody's tuning in and they're expecting some big hocus pocus leadership kind of talk, this is where it starts. This is the talks that most companies aren't willing to pay for the stuff we're talking about. And if they're not willing to do this, they're not ever going to get there. I mean, I've been in companies, they want to, you know, they want the culture to be better. They want all this stuff. And, you know, a lot of people pay for, they hire expensive consultants to come in and do an employee survey to find out why they're not engaged. I tell you why they're not engaged. If your team's not engaged, it's because the leaders are not engaged. Engaged leaders have engaged teams. I can save them a lot of money right there. They don't go invest in developing your leaders and quit worrying about the folks at the bottom.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
They're just a reflection. The culture is a reflection of the leader's character, the top leader.
You know, I think what Max says is a good point. You know, we have gotten into almost a culture of immediate, you know, quick fixes. You know, we want a diet pill that works within 30 days. We want a microwave dinner that's ready in 30 seconds. But like anything worth having, it takes time to really develop it. And it's not quick. It's not easy, but it is worth it. Like anything worth having, it's the small changes every day that compound over time. Little bitty. And because they're little bitty choices or little bitty decisions or little bitty steps forward, they don't feel significant. So it's easy to say, oh, not today. I don't feel like it today. But those little changes over time add up to something huge in the end. It's compound.
How do you know you're on the right track? It's like you were mentioning about weight loss, or you can even say it about smoking. Like one cigarette isn't going to kill you. But over time, if you're doing it every day, you know, every hour, it can. Or if you're eating, you know, if I eat one M&M, that's not going to increase my weight. But if I eat, you know, 10 a day, over time, I'm going to gain weight, you know. So how do you know you're on the right track?
I'll let Mac answer that one.
So let's go back to your beginning with the end in mind, right? So habit one says I'm responsible. Habit two says begin with the end in mind. Now that I'm responsible, who am I? Where am I? Who do I want to become? Where do I want to be, right? We have to know that, because you said, how do we know we're on the right track, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't know where you're going, it don't matter which track you're on, you're on the right track,
right?
As soon as you know where you're going, then you can. There's a question that I learned from a mentor, and we apply it to everything we do, but you first have to know where you're going and that sort of thing. So will what I'm about to do move me in the right direction? Just like us coming in, hanging out with you guys, getting to know you, just like us being at the high school, will that move us in the right direction? Our direction is to help people achieve more, be more, do more with character-based, service-based type leadership development, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever that fits, we're moving in the right direction. So when we write our book, last year we were in book writing season. It was we put out a lot of books, but it moved us in the right direction. A relationship, will this relationship move me in the right direction?
Now, if you're a company out there that's listening, or a leader of a company, or maybe soon to be a leader of a company, what is a symptom that maybe they're not in the right direction and maybe that they should talk to you or start learning more about leadership?
A symptom?
A symptom that maybe they're not on the right track and maybe there needs to be a change.
It's the number one thing you always hear is a lack of communication. I mean, that's what you hear usually from the top to the bottom. That's a big one. Or when they think, you know, disengagement, which is, again, lack of communication. When people are not talking, sharing ideas. My background's lean manufacturing and process improvement, and companies always want people to just do it, and they don't have to do it most of the time. So they get to work there without having to do it. When you grow your leadership, people start doing stuff they want to do, which is above and beyond what they have to do. So anytime there's lack of communication, turnover, I always say that's another big one. It's a huge indicator of what's wrong at the top is what's going on at the bottom. High turnover at the bottom is an indicator of low leadership at the top. and what I say is, most of the time when there's a lot of turnover, people say, you know, we can't get any good people. But you can go to the good companies with great leadership at the top, and they get the best people. At the same time, a company across the street can't get any good people. And again, it comes down to who we are is who we attract. It's a principle. You know, people, say if someone's out there that's an engineer and they're reading and studying, applying leadership like I am, but their passion is engineering instead of teaching leadership, well, they're going to be attracted to a company who values leadership development. When they go for an interview, they're interviewing the HR person and the supervisor just as much as they're being interviewed.
Sure.
And they're not going to go to the bad company. So they're not going to get those people. If you want to be the great company and attract great people, you got to do all of the work. I mean, don't work both ways.
Right. You have to role model the behavior.
Absolutely. And I think just adding on to what Max said from a personal level, if you're not excited about what you're doing all day, if you don't wake up and get excited and get fired up for what the day is going to bring you, that's a sign. That's a sign you're going the wrong direction or you're not going. And either one, you know, either one's not good. But if you're not waking up excited about what you're doing and what the day is going to bring and you're not passionate about what you're doing, That's a red flag. A red flag.
And I made a joke, you know, if that's you, quit. And then people laugh and other people who are living that, I can't quit. I need my check. Why don't you have options? And the most important thing, if we're not happy in our job, it's not what we do from 9 to 5 while we're at work. It's what we do from 5 to 9 when we're not at work. It's going to get us options so that we don't have to go to that job that we don't want. And that's most people. I have a quote in one of my books that says, too often in life, people who are searching find what they'll settle for and quit looking for what they were searching for. Y'all might have seen that movie Sixth Sense back in the 1900s. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
The guy sees dead kids.
Yeah.
I see miserable people. I see them all over. They don't even have a clue. Most of them don't even know, like the ghost. They even know they're dead in that movie. Most people are miserable and they don't even have a clue because they've settled. And they're not intentionally growing, and they don't know they really can go do something different. But most people quit growing because they stop paying the price. They won't pay a higher price.
Well, can you talk a little bit about the buy-in process?
Oh, I'll let Mac speak to that because that's just, you know, that's one of the things that's so important as you start trying to change or transform the culture in an organization. Regardless of what it is you want to do, the buy-in and the engagement from your employees is so incredibly important because otherwise you're going to tell them something and you're going to leave and they're not going to do it. So it doesn't go anywhere. and Mac is going to touch on this a little bit more about actually how to engage them. But, you know, we talk about the difference in productivity between engaging someone when you have buy-in or not. The difference in productivity can be as much as 40%. And that's huge. That's almost a half of a person, full-time employee.
And that goes, I guess, to the trust.
Yep. I mean, it all starts with trust, which starts with our character. Because we say trust is the foundation of leadership or influence. And then in my books, I talk about our intent is the foundation of trust. Like Rhea said, are we motivating or manipulating? That's the first thing you want to know. Just like with you guys, if we're trying to manipulate you, we wouldn't be here. If we're trying to motivate you. Then now we have a platform to go build trust, and it's got to work both ways. So when you're talking about buy-in, I'll just share something I got out of one of John's books, but it's so good, you can't not share this one. But what he does is just got a little chart, and he talks about when we don't buy into the leader and we don't buy in to the vision, you get another leader, which may mean quit or change departments or whatever that means for you personally. if you don't buy into the leader, but you do buy into the vision, you still get another leader that's got that same type vision. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you buy into the leader, but you don't buy into the vision, you get another vision, which means you use your influence to help influence the leader to develop a vision that's in alignment with what you both are kind of trying to achieve. And then ultimately, you buy into the leader and you buy into the leader's vision, you get behind the leader. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But the key to buy-in still is it's all about character and shared values. That's where it gets so dynamic and critical is just like if you think about the recent elections, you got two different candidates. It's almost 50-50 split on who for whichever one. But it don't matter. There's 50 for one and 50 for the other one and 50 not for one and 50 not for the other one. What's the difference? At the core is the values. Who values what relative to those two people? You may not like everything about either one of them, but ultimately you got to decide my values are more aligned with which candidate, right? And it's the same thing with leaders and with people. Let's say I'm the leader of this team right here and there's four of you guys in the room. If me and you, Lee, don't have a relationship, you're only going to do what you have to do to get by, unless you're a value-driven person. And most people are not really very value-driven. They're more react, right? So you may see me as the boss. I see you as a worker. And Stone, he and I have a great relationship. So he sees me as a leader. I see him as a follower. He's voluntarily following me, right? You following to get the check.
Mm-hmm.
So you do the work to get the check. He's following because we have a relationship. But he may be working here, but his passion may be an automotive mechanic, and we're doing engineering, you know, something different. Maybe we're in accounting. So he's not going to follow me to become an automotive mechanic because my background would be in something totally different.
Right.
What we're talking about there, we teach that, and it's based on a Harvard and a Stanford research study that John talks about, and we shared it was a principle, underlying principle in Guatemala was 87% of our results and our influence come from our character. And only 13% from our competency. And what we say is our character will either limit you or launch you because of your competence. You got to have a competency to get somewhere, right? But it's your character. I could have 10 PhD degrees, but if you guys didn't like me, well, I wouldn't get to be on the team.
Right.
But don't most companies spend their training dollars on competency over character?
That's, yeah. That's a good one. And a lot of times when I'm in a room with a leader, I'll get on the whiteboard and you know, draw a T, and I'll ask them where you know, I put character on one side with 87%, competency on the other with 13%, and I'll say where's most of your problem when you have to terminate somebody or get rid of somebody? Is it usually a competency issue or a character issue? Most all the time is character issues, right? We hire people for what they know, but we fire them for who they are, and that's the way you get them to validate it. So I take them there first so they'll look at where are their problem. Most all the time, it's in character. It's people issues. Then I'll say, now let's talk about your budget for training and development. Now look at that chart. Where's all your money go? Most of the time, it's 100%.
Right.
Most of the time, 100% goes for competency type stuff, safety training, job skill training, quality, all this stuff, the competency stuff that you have to know. But most of them spend hardly any. Most of them don't even have. Most companies don't have any formalized leadership development program.
But why is there such a disconnect?
Well, I think it's because of the character of the leaders. Like the best companies, like Chick-fil-A, as an example, with Truett Cathy, they say they're not in the chicken business. They're in the people business. His values are growing and developing people, and the way they serve other people, and they help these people is through the chicken business. You got.
I was just going to add, I think it's easy, you know, it's easy to do training for skills. It's easy to send someone to a conference. It's much more difficult to actually get them to change their values and improve themselves because that requires us to go first. And so, you know, that's probably why a lot of organizations spend more money on the competency, the skill side, because it's easier and it's quicker, or we think it's quicker. You know, it's much like joining the gym. It's not joining the gym that's going to get you the results in life. It's doing something about it.
And I've seen repeatedly, this is just a cycle. And when we go into companies, I always tell people, you know, you've hired us. It's our job to grow your team, your people. But I always look at them and say, but it's your job to keep them.
Right.
We're going to grow them. I don't know if you're going to keep them.
That's right?
Right. And what happens is, and this is the majority of the cases, the leaders don't want to get involved with this training. They already got the positions and the titles and the income, right? They got a lot of stuff already, and they got a full plate. And I always tell them, if you don't come get involved, it don't mean you have to be involved every minute. But these people have to see you reading a book. They have to see you come sit down, spend some time, take some notes, and ask some humble questions and say that I don't know. They got to see you. First of all, they got to see you modeling it. And if they don't see you modeling it, what's going to happen if we come in and grow the people and you never get involved? The people who could actually move this company forward, who can actually turn the organization around, who could do all these things that you want done, they're going to be the first ones to leave because they learn what you're not doing.
Right.
And then they can identify it and they're like, I don't want to be here anymore.
That's exactly right. And they'll either, we call it, John talks about it, John Maxwell, the law of the lid, basically says, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where's your leader? If he's a 6, you can't raise your company any higher than a 6. Any leaders who have potential to climb up the scale beyond a 6, they're going to be bumping their head against you. And what happens is they're either going to get frustrated. Either way, they're frustrated. But if they're proactive, they're not frustrated, right? They just climb up there, then they go exercise some options, and they go help another company get better. They leave. But if they're reactive, they go up and they bump their head and they get mad and they start talking about the leaders at break and at home and out in the communities, talking about how this company's not good and that's why you can't get any good people because the people who are there are telling everybody this ain't a good place to work, right? So then they get tired of fighting, so they just go back, can't beat them. They just go back down. And usually they're more reactive now because they've had a taste of what leadership is. Like when I say they bring us in sometimes, the people, we give people a lot of hope because they want this stuff that we're talking about. And if the leaders come in there, they still got a little more hope. But ultimately, what determines if the investment in leadership development is going to work is, are the leaders living it? I mean, that there is no other way around it. And that's another reason why they go to competency. Well, I don't have to do anything if we go to competency, right? If I send you to competency training, I don't have to change. But if I send you to leadership development training, you learn about character, and I got to be modeling it.
That's right. Because competency, it's a checklist that they're just kind of checking off. Yep, I did that, or I passed this test. Character is an everyday thing.
Yep, character. What we say is character static. It don't ever change. And I mean, it can change over time, but your character is what it is, regardless of what you're doing. And competency is situational, right? If you want me to do heart surgery on you in the morning, you really don't want me to do heart surgery. But if we want to talk about leadership stuff, that's my competency.
Right.
And if my character's suitable to what you value, then we can work together.
It's a good fit. Right. So now, if somebody wanted to learn more about your work or get in touch with you, what's the best way to learn more?
TopStoryLeadership.com is our website. And of course, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Rhea Story and Max Story. So connect with us. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
And I'd just like to tell your listeners that we have two really good books, Working on Yourself, that we have is Maximize Your Potential. And then another one is Maximize Your Leadership Potential. Those two books, they're 30 chapters, 3 pages each, only 90 pages, and really simple to read, but they're very, very impactful.
And that's good for the leaders and their teams.
Yep.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of the show today.
Absolutely.
And we're excited about having your material on some of our...
Oh, yeah. We've got all kinds of plans. We've been very proactive.
You guys have been busy.
You have been proactive. I like it. That's why we're over here.
Digging deep into our character. We've got all kinds of plans that, Lee, you're probably not up to speed on, but we are investing a lot of time and energy and effort into our community, the membership and that kind of thing. So we are making a lot of these materials and other leaders that we've come across that we believe have the character and the competency to serve us. And so we would ask our listeners, if you haven't done it already, and I know many of you have, go to brxmember.com. Make sure that you get involved with our community. And we've got a lot of neat things coming your way now and in the very near future.
So brxmember.com, and they can get on your email list there so they can stay
on
top of things. You guys will be sending out information. And just for the listeners, we've provided you guys, which you guys know it, but 100-minute video on kind of what we talked about today, but it goes much deeper, demystifying leadership series. You get about a free download of about a 20-page workbook and instant access to that workbook and a 100-minute video that you guys are going to be making it available through a higher-level program. But to find out about that and get access to it, they need to get it brxmember.com
and, yes, sir.
And get registered up for your email list so they can stay on top of what you guys are doing. And y'all doing stuff way beyond just us, but that's just a piece we're contributing
to.
Yeah,
but you're the headliner. Well, no, Rhea's the headliner. Because of her, you got in.
Yeah, Rhea's the rock star. I'm the backup singer. I know my place, Stone. Nah. I know where I stand.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. And thank you for sharing this important information about leadership that everybody should listen to. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. We'll be right back.